If you negotiate with your knee before standing up, you're losing that argument. Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000 as in zero pain.
The summer wind came blowing in from across the sea.
Thank you, Maple. Good morning. It's John Williams. How are you?
It lingered there to touch your hair and walk with me. All summer long, we sang a song, and then we strolled that golden sand. Two sweethearts and the summer wind.
I hope you and your sweethearts are going to get through the summer wind and temperatures that we are dealing with this weekend. One of the warmest, most humid, and that's the operative word, weekends or days that you'll experience maybe this year and have 4 years. It really is something. I don't want to say it's really hot outside, but last night when I got home, and this is what you notice, it's not how hot it is during the day, it's how warm it still is at night, right? I mean, 8, 9, 10 o'clock midnight or 2 in the morning, it's 85 degrees and humid out. You step out and go, ho, 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 I didn't expect this. Thank you very little, Tom Skilling. Last night when I got home, actually, I cooked hamburgers on the grill. No exaggeration, I did not have to start the coals. I didn't turn the gas on. I just put the raw beef on the grate, and it cooked. Medium.
I need to see the video picture.
I should have videoed that.
It didn't happen.
It just sizzled, Griffin.
I just have a hard time believing that.
Why do you doubt me?
No, I've been miserable. I hate this so much.
You do.
It's a disaster.
And there's those of us who, you know, 11 and a half months of the year walk around going, you know, I really like the hot weather. It's sort of a humble brag that people like me have. Well, you people are...
Right, it's the opposite of what I do. How do you... Genuinely, though, and this is a judgment-free zone... The past few days, I'm just tell the truth. Just be honest. Have you been enjoying it? I'm genuinely curious.
Yeah,
I'm not going to.
Well, because I spend most of my day in the air conditioning, right? So whenever I step out, every day that I step out of this building, I go, "Oh, thank you. It is a relief to me." And
you like what we got going right now.
The walk to the train is the most pleasant part of my day, and it's a 15-minute walk. And when I get home, I will sit outside and sweat a little bit, and eventually I'll come in and it'll be cool to like that. But like, now last night when I was cooking the hamburgers, and Griffin, we did not turn the gas on. That was a bit much. I was expecting it to be a little cooler than that. I think about the baseball players, Joe. I mean, talk about the fans. That's got to be tough.
I've been told that on days like today and yesterday, starting pitchers will ask for two extra jerseys, and they'll rotate every 3 innings.
Yeah, right. Yeah, me too. Every time I turned a hamburger, Brenda gave me another jersey. Joe, we did not turn the gas on the grill. I did not have to actually put the heat on it.
Okay,
it was so hot. Are you catching that?
Did you close the grill?
Well, yeah, you want to retain some of the heat.
Okay, I believe it.
Thank you, Joe.
I'm against Griff. I believe it. I believe you.
You know, what we did yesterday was I made a mashup of 10 great summer songs. Actually, 11. This is maybe just, I don't know if this is about WGN listeners or people who just relate to their music and they're really smart, but I played this clip yesterday. You're going to hear 10 songs in about 20 seconds. And I said, tell me who is singing what song. So you had to know the artist and the title. I'll do it for you twice here. We'll play it once. I'll give you the answers, and then you can listen for them. But how many of these can you name?
Like a heat wave, the heat is on. Hot town, summer in the city. Hot to find in the summertime. Man selling ice cream. Summer breeze.
There it is. How many of those could you name? Griff, are you any good at that? That's my generation, not yours.
I know all the songs.
Yeah.
But artists, maybe I'd get
might
half,
escape
half
you,
of
yeah.
them. Yeah, yeah, maybe.
Okay, so here they are. Linda Ronstadt, Heat Wave. Glenn Frey, The Heat Is On. Love and Spoonful, Hot Town, Summer in the City. Sly and the Family Stone, Hot Fun in the Summertime. You probably don't need me to sing them for you. Chicago Saturday in the Park is one that's near and dear to many of our hearts. What a great summer song that is. Seals and Crofts, Summer Breeze. The Beatles, Here Comes the Sun. Friends of Distinction, Grazin' in the Grass is a song you will listen to later today now that I've put that worm in your ear. Summer Wind, Frank Sinatra, Your Fickle Friend. Mongo Jerry in the Summertime is just a joy. And then, of course, we closed with Buster Poindexter's Hot, 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 which is as fun a video as you'll see. Okay, there's your lineup. Griff, do it one more time. 3, 2, 1, woof.
Like a heat wave, the heat is on. Hot town, summer in the city. Hot fun in the summertime. Man selling ice cream. Summer breeze.
So there you go. I said, Griff, if there's a summer song you want to play a little later on, let me know what it is. You picked a couple out. I could do that for Maple and Joe, for that matter. Joe, is there a song that is part of your summer mix in your brain right now?
You know, it's funny you brought up the Grazing in the Grass song. We recently had an Anchorman Day at the ballpark in Kane County, and that was part of the soundtrack. So that's recently been on my playlist now.
You mean from the movie?
Yes.
I don't remember that song, and I don't know that movie that well, but that's in there. Huh?
I think it's in the beginning. I mean, it's from the 70s,
yeah, sure.
Correct?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Grazing in the Grass, Friends of Distinction. Listen to that all the way through. It is just a great song. And Mongo Jerry in the Summertime, watch the video of that, too. It's just a real pleasure. And Buster Poindexter's Hot, Hot, Hot is very hot. It's 10:18. So, it's not just the weather this weekend, of course. You've got baseball's Hall of Fame inducting 6 members. For the first time ever, Joe, you can just opine on this for a sentence or two. We got to take a break, but for the first time ever, someone will be inducted into the Hall of Fame unanimously. For the first time ever. Right? Am I reading that right?
Yep, you're right.
That's hard to believe.
Mariano Rivera.
So, Lee Smith gets in. Props to you, Mr. Cub. He said, you bet I'm going in as a Cub, although he played many years not in a Cub uniform. And Harold Baines, the quiet giant for the White Sox, is going in, deservedly so, too. He said, I like to let my actions speak for me. In fact, Harold Baines is so quiet in reading about him, you think, that's almost weird now. How many players are that good and that flat? You know, they just go out and do their job. Maybe a Rizzo, maybe a Chris Bryant. The Cubs really aren't that chatty and flashy, but that's really the exception to the rule. Doesn't it seem to you these days?
I totally agree with the uniqueness of Harold Baines. I mean, he might be one of the most soft-spoken guys ever in the MLB with the talent he had.
We'll talk about this later on. But so Mariano Rivera, 425 potential votes. He got 425. No one has done that before. You're saying, wait a minute, John, Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth, 11 people did not vote to put Babe Ruth in the Hall of Fame when he was first eligible. Hank Aaron, who broke his record, 9 people did not vote to put Hank Aaron in the Hall of Fame on the first ballot. He got in there, of course. It's 10:19. Let's pause for a minute and then note one other noteworthy thing. It was about this time that man was walking on the moon 50 years ago.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Roger, Tranquility. We copy you on the ground. You got a bunch of guys about to turn blue. We're breathing again. Thanks a lot.
Famous words. Jim Ryan is the ABC News correspondent in Houston this morning. Jim, John, you're on WGN Radio. How are you?
Morning, Sean. Good morning from Space Center Houston.
Yeah, no kidding. So they have activities there today to honor the anniversary. 50 years ago this morning, man landed on the moon.
They sure do, yes. It was the evening time that the actual steps came, and this all is building up toward this evening's 50th anniversary of the actual moment that Neil Armstrong stepped off that ladder and onto the lunar surface. They've had concerts here for the last few days. They really began this with a celebration of the liftoff that came, I believe, on Monday, and then they'll have another 50th anniversary celebration of the splashdown when those three crew members dropped off into the Pacific Ocean, safely ending this long flight, the Apollo 11 mission to the moon, John.
I guess it depends on where you were, because all around the world people were watching it. So for some folks it was morning, some folks it was evening. But in the United States it was man landed on the moon in the evening. Is that right?
Yes. It was, I believe it was 8:20, something like that, Central Time.
Yeah. Let's see. As a family, we were living in Hawaii at the time. And I don't know what your recollection of it is. We all have our own. And over the years, they may have changed from reality. But I specifically remember my dad pointing up to the sky. So I guess it might have been evening for us there, too. Let's see. 8:07. Maybe it was at some point while they were up there. But this is the scene in my head. And it is my dad pointing up there, and we could see the moon. And it looked so close, but also so far away. And my dad said, they're up there. And it was just hard to imagine that that was true, but it was.
It was, yeah. And I remember I've been talking with a lot of people here, people who, it is kind of touchy to walk up to somebody and say, yeah, hey, were you around? Do you remember what happened? And a lot of folks said, I wasn't even born yet. Well, you try to pick somebody who obviously was. I was 6 years old, and I remember sitting there on the living room floor and watching the images on our black and white TV set, those images coming down from the moon. And my mom standing there said, you know, you'll probably remember this the rest of your life. And she was absolutely right, John. I remember it very well.
And, you know, the more you think about it, and I guess we've all sort of refreshed our recollections of how that happened. The Saturn rockets lifted it off, and the command module and the Eagle traveled the rest of the distance until they finally separated, and then the Eagle landed. When you think about all of the steps along the way and how complicated that was, that really was a remarkable feat, especially given the fact that it was 1969.
Right, and Buzz Aldrin a few days ago described it as a daisy chain. Every little step, every link had to work or the next one wouldn't, and they would have to abort. And somehow, you're right, the engineering that led up to it, the design of the spacesuits and of the spacecraft and all the things that went into the liftoff and then making sure that they could get back safely, it all somehow worked. And sure enough, you know, on that date 50 years ago, he stepped off the ladder, and then they made it back home safely.
I have to tell you, the liftoff from the moon is the part that I remember as being the most tenuous, the most anxious for me, because, yeah, you know, you're going to land. Maybe you'll crash, but you're going to land. I get that. But then there's going to be the rocket fuel, and that it's going to blast you off, because if this thing doesn't work, we can't come and get you, you know? It had, talk about a tense moment.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And then when you see that pop, and then the lander lifts off and then catches up again with Collins up there floating above, and somehow everything worked, every link worked. And consider that the spaceship, the craft that carried them off to the moon, had less computing power than you've got in your smartphone in your pocket right now, and somehow everything worked.
What is the feeling there in Houston? Is it nostalgia? Is it, gee, we haven't done as much since? I mean, what's the general attitude of the scientists or administrators there?
Well, I think it's a little of each. You see the nostalgia in the newspaper images. They're reprinting of what Houston looked like back then as the space city, as the place where they controlled those missions from. But also, yeah, some disappointment on the part of a few of these folks. Aldrin himself said yesterday that he was disappointed that more has not been done, that moon travel kind of dropped off in the early 1970s. And there's some optimism, you know, on the part of the Trump administration. They can get people back to the moon in a few years and then on to Mars after that. So I think you're right. It's nostalgia. There's some bittersweet disappointment that more hasn't been done with the program, but a sense of optimism that more might be done in the future.
Yeah, the president said yesterday we're going to put the glamour back in space travel, and there's, I guess, two ways to get to Mars. One is a direct flight, and one is go to the moon for a while and then launch from there, right?
Right, yes. The president was asking yesterday, is NASA director about the possibility of going straight to Mars from here, and posing it hypothetically, I think. One of the coolest things, John, that I got to do yesterday was to walk through. Remember the pictures you've seen, the film of Mission Control, those guys there in their white shirts watching what was going on the big screens in front of them and those consoles. They have restored it to look exactly the way it did in 1969 when Apollo 11 was going on. It's as though the whole room full of people stood up and took a break at the same time, left their ashtrays left their coffee cups there. It's just absolutely amazing.
Yeah, we've seen the pictures, and it is a bit of time travel. I'm wearing bell bottoms right now, by the way, just to kind of blend into the scene. Well, what lucky for you, and we'll listen for reports all day long. Jim Ryan, ABC News in Houston. Thanks for your time, Jim.
Thanks, John.
You betcha. Have a good day. I think he is. It's 1029. Featuring some summer music today. Although I don't know this one, Griffin.
It's a Long Hot Summer by the Style Council.
I did Summer Wind Sinatra. Griff's playing Style Council. You know, my Brenda's, one of her favorite songs is Katie Lang's Summer Fling. I'll have to sample a little of that. I'm playing, we're taking your requests at 312-981-7200. By the way, I'm also looking for your texts on your moon memory, your moon moment memory. Apollo 11, 50 years ago, walked on the moon for the first time. I was reading Time Magazine's piece about it, and they said here was the 24 hours of that day for them. Imagine floating in space, 240,000 miles from home, or at least you've traveled that far now, and you're supposed to go to sleep, and then when you wake up, you're going to get in this thing and plunk, land on the moon. Sound effects my own. I mean, I don't know how you sleep. Like, I don't know if I have to drive to Peoria tomorrow. I actually have trouble sleeping the night before. It's just, you know, sometimes there's something on your mind and you think, oh boy, tomorrow's a big day, and you toss and turn. How do you sleep when you're floating out there in space and you go, boy, big day tomorrow? Got to clean the garage and land on the moon. So those guys did. And then they did everything right, including at the last second make a couple of last-ditch maneuvers to correctly land on the moon, or rather on some boulders. At least that's the way I believe the story is told. You know who knows a lot about this is Voula Seradakis, who is the curator in the collections department at the Museum of Science and Industry. She's sort of their expert on this Apollo mission and eight, and for that matter, all of them. She talked to us earlier in the week, and we asked her to come back on the day that man did land. Voula, it's John. Welcome back to WGN. How are you?
I am good. Thank you.
Stand by. Roger.
Okay. That's the last time I'll do that. So what stands out most in your mind when you think of man landing on the moon 50 years ago today? What's foremost in your mind?
Foremost would be seeing them accomplish this amazing feat, having traveled all these thousands of miles through space, taking 3 days to get there, and seeing this beautiful moon below them, the sheer size and beauty of the moon, and seeing the Earth in the distance, so beautiful, tiny, and fragile, and then eventually taking those first steps onto the surface of the moon. I mean, what a historic event.
Well, that's the iconic moment, isn't it? Neil Armstrong actually stepping down, and, you know, gingerly at first, because they really didn't know exactly what the surface was like. Nothing was known until you first get there. So he makes that step and then issues that famous statement. You know, Bill Leff, our friend here at WGN Radio, who does a midday show with Wendy, and Mark Carman was actually on with Bill yesterday, and they played the iconic first words and then talked about whether or not Neil Armstrong muffed his line, right? Yeah, one small step for a man.
Yeah, they think there was an A before the man. So that's one small step for a man, but kind of sounds like small steps for man. So a little bit of that.
Well, and I think what happened, too, is that it might have been a radio transmission drop of static that muted that word. That happens. Yeah. In fact, it just now happened on your phone as you were calling into us. So it can happen. But I think we all got the idea. And, you know, that's the other thing. I screw up lines on the radio all the time, and I have a pretty comfortable existence here. Imagine you are walking backwards down a ladder on the moon, and it's never been done before, and then you're thinking, don't blow my line. Are you kidding me? Don't die is what I'm thinking, not get the line right. So I'm gonna grant him a missed letter here and there, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure he was under a lot of stress and pressure, and they could read his vitals through the suit back in mission control. So there was a bit of that, even though it was a prepared line, and I'm sure he practiced it.
Yeah.
But yes, it happened.
The other thing to note, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I listened this week to, you know, hours, literally hours of the communication between the, was it the Johnson Space Center and Apollo, or was it called the Johnson Space Center then? Was the...
Kennedy? And Kennedy... Right. Kennedy Space Center.
Was how calm they were. I mean, even at moments where the rockets had to fire and certain maneuvers had to take place, they could have been watching a ball game the way they sounded.
Absolutely. As I had mentioned before to you, I mean, just descending to the moon, landing the LM was a nail biter. You know, fuel was running low and they were missing their target, and Armstrong had to remove the auto control and put the control into his hands. I mean, manual control, basically, while Aldrin was helping read the navigational tools to him and telling him where to land, helping him land. And you're right, everyone seemed, you listen to the transmission, everyone's so calm, and you would never really have guessed something so serious was about to happen. And Armstrong remained what I like to call the three C's: cool, calm, and collected. And, you know, his test pilot training really helped him land the LM in the end.
Were they looking out the window? Is that how they were able to see where he was going to land?
Right. So Armstrong was, in fact, looking out the window on the LM and sees that the computer was about to land them in a very rocky area full of boulders. And again, he takes over control of the LM, and Aldrin's assisting him in navigation. And the alarms are going off. The computer is receiving too much information that it cannot handle in real time. And fuel's running really dangerously low. But fortunately, Armstrong is able to land the LM on a level patch of ground just beyond this crater and these boulders in the end.
Talk about doing it manually. I mean, we make it sound like the car was going to park itself, but now you're parallel parking the Eagle on the moon. You've got the steering wheel. You're looking out the window. You go, a little bit more over here.
Right.
And quite literally, that's what they did.
Right, absolutely. And to your point earlier about not being able to sleep, when they landed on the moon, they were supposed to sleep for a few hours before opening the hatch and descending the ladder, and they really couldn't do that. They just spent a couple of hours making sure everything was correct and right, and they finally said, let's suit up and go out there, depressurize the cabin, and began for their EVA prep, which is extravehicular activity.
What do you all have at the Museum of Science and Industry about all of this?
Well, so it turns out that we do have this incredibly impressive, if I may say, lunar module trainer. It was used, so it's the same size as a real lunar module, and it was used at the Kennedy Space Center as the primary lunar source activities trainer for astronauts who went to the moon. And all the astronauts from Neil Armstrong, first man on the moon with Apollo 11, all the way through to Gene Cernan, the last man on the moon on Apollo 17, trained for lunar missions on this particular LM. And you can get right up close to it and take a look inside the hatch. And it's just really impressive. And it has a full complement of functional instruments inside of it as well.
And they have the cigarettes and ashtrays in there, or am I thinking of someplace else?
No, that we do not have.
And so I guess you also get a sense of how cramped it was.
Oh, absolutely. Bearing in mind, though, it was just for the two astronauts. So on Apollo 11, it would have been Armstrong, who was the commander, and Aldrin, who was the lunar module pilot. So it was always meant as a trainer for the two particular astronauts on each mission that were supposed to pilot it down to the surface of the moon.
Good day to go there today. What with the you have air conditioning, right?
Yes.
Air conditioning at the Museum of Science and Industry. And
we do.
You can actually get up close and personal 50 years to the day, almost to the hour, from when man walked on the moon. Well, it's nice to talk to you. I guess we have one more rendezvous, you and I. That'll be next week when we celebrate the landing, that is, the splashdown back on Earth.
Yep, that's the one last anniversary on this mission, I suppose. Yeah, so the 24th.
We'll visit then. Thank you, Vula.
Thank you so much.
Vula Saradakis is the Collections Department Curator at the Museum of Science and Industry. Did you know they actually have the life-size trainer that they actually learned how to do that stuff on at MSI? It's 1049 on WGN. This is Sean Williams. I am shocked at this news. Something is going to be canceled in Chicago. And when I heard this thing was coming, there was already some protest about it. But I thought, that's going to happen. You can't stop that. They stopped that. How did they stop that? This is a funny story coming up.
People dancing, people laughing, a man selling ice cream.
Ice cream day's tomorrow.
Singing Italian song.
This is a great summer song, isn't it?
Can you dig it? Yes, I can. And I've been waiting such a long time.
Here's a headline from earlier in the week in the Chicago Tribune. Morgan Green's story was headlined, Three Plover Chicks Hatch as Mambi Music Fest Floats Ban to Move Away from Montrose Beach. You've got your big music fests in the city of Chicago, right? Lollapalooza's, I guess, the grand poobah of them all. Pitchfork is this weekend. Have you seen the pictures of thousands and thousands of kids jammed into... what park is Pitchfork in, Griff? It's right over there out by the United Center, Union Park. And it just looks like either heaven or hell, depending on how you feel about Hot Sweaty Music Fest. But you got Pitchfork this weekend. And then one that comes at the end of summer, it's a big one, it's called Mambi on the Beach. Now, it's moved this year to Montrose. It's just a beach further north up the lake. And a lot of folks up there didn't like it because they don't want a music fest in their beach and in their backyard, right? It kind of shuts the thing down, blah, blah, blah. Also, there's a bird sanctuary up there. Brenda and I walk by it frequently on our little morning stroll, and it's the lovely thing. Who knew? Right there in the city, you can see skyscrapers and condominiums, and there's a bird sanctuary, and it's lovely. And there's people with giant binoculars looking at the dang birds. And three little baby birds in there are called piping plovers, and they said, well, these are endangered, and if we have Mambi on the beach... it's going to endanger the birds. Carl, am I getting this right so far?
Yes, you are.
Carl Giamatti is on the phone line.
The piping plovers are federally endangered birds.
You're the president of the Chicago Ornithological Society. And so you all, what do you, petition the park district to move the music fest or cancel it? What happened?
So, you know, a lot of our role as a local bird conservation organization is to try to enhance the habitat and protect the habitat that exists for birds in both Chicago and the greater Chicagoland area. And so we try to, you know, partner you know, sit down with local municipalities, park districts, forest reserves to be an advocate for the birds. And, you know, Montrose Point is really the crown jewel of lakefront habitat in the city of Chicago. Over 340 different species of birds have been seen there. And the habitat in the past 10 to 15 years, mostly thanks to the work by the Chicago Park District and dozens of volunteers, has become appropriate for breeding birds. And there's no better indication of that than when the federally endangered Great Lakes piping plover showed up this year.
So it hadn't been seen there previously, and you go, hokey smokes, there's one of those endangered species, huh?
So they've passed through on their migration, but they've generally been heading up to Wisconsin, or they've just been birds that have been kind of temporarily pushed off route on their way to Michigan, where most of these birds breed.
But Carl, in that case, so you say, okay, they're here in Chicago now. It would seem to me like a David and Goliath thing. You know, I mean, people mock the idea of saving the spotted owl. What are we going to do next, right? So here you have a nest of these little birds, and you say, okay, wait, we have to cancel this giant music fest? But that's kind of what you did.
Well, you know, we had hoped that we could work together and try to get, persuade Mambi to just simply move to another beach. You know, Montrose is such a heavily programmed beach. There's a lot of different user groups there. And so, even without the presence of these plovers, you have the incredible habitat here and all these different user groups. So it's a tough, tough needle to thread. And that's where, we had hoped that they would just move to another beach, but obviously we're dealing with high lake levels now, so other beaches that are more appropriate for what we'll call active recreation, like a North Avenue beach, are not really available. I mean, I've been to North Avenue Beach several times this year, and it's a fraction of what it had been in the past. So we had hoped that they'd been able to move, but apparently that wasn't in the cards for them.
So they just canceled it outright. It would have been later in the summer. One last thing about this, and props to you guys, did you meet much resistance? How agreeable were they to these limited options for themselves?
I mean, obviously, they were not pleased about it. You know, just as us as a bird conservation organization, we had incredible concerns about their presence. So, I think our goal, and our suggestion to the Park District and the petition circulated by the Chicago Audubon Society is that the Park District will take this as an opportunity to develop a long-term policy. That way, all parties have a little bit more predictable of a presence there. It's better for businesses that want to do work at the Park District to have a policy in place. And so that way, we can also have the stakeholders chime in for a kind of a long-term protection plan limiting large events at Montrose.
How are those little birds doing?
Great. So well, they hatched just a couple days ago, and the first 3 to 5 days is critical. It's usually when hatchling fatalities occur. So right now we have, 26 volunteer monitors scheduled for today. The outpouring of support has been amazing. We have over 150 people that have volunteered to watch these birds, and really starting from about June 1st, there's been someone watching them from dawn to dusk every day since then.
How about that? The Ornithological Society President Carl Giometti. Carl, good luck to you all. Good luck to those birds. Let's, if this town can fall in love with an alligator, let's fall in love with some little birds too, eh?
That's the hope.
All right, good luck to you guys. Thank you, Maple. This is John Williams in the Allstate Skyline Studio at 11:12. So you're almost through the heat wave. Tomorrow it won't get as warm as it is now. 70s in the Sunday, Monday, Tuesday forecast. I'll take that. The Mincing Rascals was judged by the Illinois Broadcasters Association this year to be the best podcast in the state of Illinois. Props to Steve Bertrand, whose voice you will hear in our podcast broadcast here from WGN Radio News, and also Eric Zorn, the columnist from the Chicago Tribune. You'll hear my voice, and you'll hear that of Mark Baser. He is the host of, among other things, a podcast called The Interview Show. Two little facts about the clip that you're about to hear. In Naperville, a gas station attendant this week was fired after he verbally abused some Hispanic women who came into his store to buy snacks. The video, you may have seen this, shows him telling them that ICE is coming and they should go back to where they came from. It's part of a national debate, I would say, this week about immigration, and also, is it okay to criticize the United States of America? I think that's where the conversation is right now. It is about that point that Mark Baser says.
One of the central ethoses I was brought up with about America was that we're always trying to, reach that city on a hill. We're always trying to challenge to make ourselves better. And it seems very ugly that the only people who can do that are people who are born here, notwithstanding the fact that three of the four on the squad were born here.
Right. The other thing is that America is obviously a deeply flawed place. We can't give health care to all of our people. There's all kinds of issues you can have with this country while still not wanting to leave it. You want to improve it. That's why they're in Congress. You want to make things better.
We're human beings. Every country, right? Every country can be made better or has problems with it.
Yeah, which is why this sort of this unreflective patriotism that he's now trying to call on is is silly. I mean, I think you need to say that these women, whether you agree with them politically or not, they have a political vision. They are trying to enact it. They believe it's going to make the country a better place.
When this happened over the weekend, the tweets were really the genesis of this, right? And then we came on the air on Monday, and Steve, you'll recall, I wasn't as animated about it as I became on Tuesday and Wednesday. Monday, I said, and I still feel a little bit
surprised.
Wanted
to smack you around a little bit.
I know. Trust me. I think my wife directed a little hostility at me afterwards, and I believe the source of it may have been this. I didn't see this for the watershed moment that maybe it is. I thought this is another callous, stupid thing Trump said or tweeted. Why is this so much different than the other things he said or done?
It's racist. Hillary Clinton said bad things about him for about 18 months, and he never said she should go back to where she came from. Never. These four women are women of color, and he says that they should go back to where they came from.
Park Ridge?
Yeah. Go back to the leafy streets of Park
Ridge.
There are
problems in Park Ridge. Go home and fix those.
I guess so. So racism trumps all, right? So that's worse than sexism. That's worse than ugly language. That's worse than lying. I'm not a defender of racism. I'm just trying to put it in perspective.
I have some of the same questions that you do about this, John, which is like, because you look back at the history, and every time he says something like this, you get... you know, the video montage of all the terrible things that he said over the years. We
used to do brackets, Eric. I don't know if this would win its regional.
Trump's outrage brackets?
Yeah, we did.
This ought not to have made such a ripple because it's so common.
But there's even a conversation right now about whether or not the word racist should be used in describing the president's words. I was talking about this with my producer this week, Ashley, who's filling in for Elif, and I said, you notice that CNN says the president's racist comments. I don't personally disagree with that. You know how I feel about this, but I also think that's a judgment that not all of the country shares. They don't put them in quotes. They don't say somebody else says they're racist. The president denies they're racist. When does a comment become patently that? I'm not making this conversation up.
Well, I think, and I don't fully understand this, but I was hearing an essay on this morning, and we need to figure out a way to divide the adjective racist with the noun racist. When we say Donald Trump is a racist, we think, well, this man's damned to hell. Everything about him is bad. But you can do racist things and not necessarily be, well, you would be a racist, I think. But it wouldn't
no,
be,
I get
wouldn't
your point.
Threading a fine needle there.
A word can fly out of your mouth or a phrase that
which
you
would
regret.
Be a racist
which
comment.
Would be a racist well, comment, but does that color everything about you?
And all I'm saying is that we need to be mature enough to say that what you just said was racist without saying you are a racist.
Well, either way, if you are a news reporter, if you're doing a newscast, if you're writing a news story, you're writing a headline on a news story, I think that accusation belongs in quotes. It turns out that about a third of the country doesn't think it's racist, according to like some of the Snap polls.
Do you say so-called global or climate change? 30% of the country doesn't believe that.
No, I don't think it's 30%.
Okay, I'll give you 18.
But
Steve just made a good point.
Where do you draw the line on this? Because there are. You know, flat earthers. I mean, you can't say the so-called globe, you know. And if you're a radio host and you want to call it racist, God bless you, because it is. If I'm a columnist, I'm going to call it racist. If I'm on social media, I'm going to call it racist. But I'm not comfortable in for news stories and news headlines using that term, because I sort of imagine, what if they start saying, like, you know, one of the accusations against the squad is that they're communists. What if news stories just started saying, well, they're communists, and just calling them communists?
Well, because some people believe that.
The question, as with everything, is at what point along the line do you change? Like,
right.
So if he said, if let's say Trump, and he didn't say this, so I'm making that clear, but let's say if Trump flat out said, these people are inferior because of their race, would at that point the Tribune, or would you advocate that a paper then use the word racist? And when do we get to that point?
That's a good question.
Oh, come on, that's an easy one. Yes.
Well, no, I'm saying his broad question is where do we? I mean, Mark's hypothetical is a pretty easy one, but the broader question of where is it along that line? I mean, what Trump said,
he did drive down a street in Chicago and say only black people could live like this.
I mean, I really don't want to be sticking up for this guy at all. But what I'm saying is that what he did say about these people is that they should go back to the countries where they came from, which is bizarre because three of them were born here.
And therein lies the racism of the statement. That was the racist component of the statement.
So I'm feeling a little, I'm not defensive, but I mean, if I see someone coming up in a car, I'm confident to saying the subject drove up in a car. It's a fact.
We have five Illinois Republican congressmen. All of them voted no to condemn the president. All of them publicly stated, though, that they thought that those were, they didn't use the word reprehensible, but they condemned the president's words in print or on Twitter. When it came to a vote, they did not vote. Somebody texted me this week and said, John, you've never heard of party line votes? I have. But I think you could survive as a Republican voting no on, voting yes on this. And they didn't. Not a one of them.
I understand.
I'm the only
that.
Person in America that is surprised by that.
No, there's a lot in the media. The cable news are making huge deals of this. The Democrats presented this vote in order to put the Republicans in this position. I mean, this was a political. It's a political move on their part.
You keep saying that it's such an easy fix, Steve. So you're in that pickle. You're a Republican congressman. How hard is it to say yes? I condemn that tweet, and I'll bet you that person gets reelected.
Well, I think it was also done to show solidarity after the week of infighting.
If you're a lawmaker, I think I'm okay with them coming out and publicly condemning the statement, but then saying I'm not going to be drawn into this.
I want to change subjects and completely change subjects. This is the summer of nicknames. Alligator Bob, Hunted Chance the Snapper. We have the squad we've been talking about, and now my tie guy. What's the matter?
Well, I think we should resist the squad. Because if we start calling these four the squad,
they've used it themselves.
I don't care. That doesn't make it right. It starts to cartoonize them.
I think you're right about that.
Compartmentalize them.
The first time I heard it, I thought that's a pejorative used by the right to characterize them as some sort of evil or anti-American squad. It sounds bad.
Well, even if they're superheroes, I don't care. It animates them in a way that I think we shouldn't do.
I didn't make it up. There's also Mai Tai Guy.
Hold it there. I don't want people calling him Mai Tai Guy.
Well, he's the fan at Wrigley Field that had that on the back of his Cubs jersey. He wrangled Kyle Schwarber's walk-off home run ball from a little boy.
High drive to left. Is it enough? Cubs win! Kyle Schwarber in the 10th.
Now, Mai Tai Guy's got a Twitter account. He was unapologetic to the Tribune's Paul Sullivan.
Talked to Mark Harmon on WGN.
You know, I didn't see where I hit somebody. I didn't see where I got in the way. Maybe I did.
But he says, you guys know the rules. So if an adult male wrangles a baseball away from a little kid who's also reaching for it in the basket there in center left field, that's okay. If you're asking me what are the rules, and I'm asking you guys this, I would say the rules are you give it to the kid. You have two kids. What do you say?
You know what this is indicative of? This, I'm going to bring it back for a second. This is Mai Tai Guy or following the lead of Trump. I'm sorry to get too carried away here, but it's
yes,
this
you are.
Idea.
You are completely
no, I'm not.
Carried
hold
away.
On a second.
This has nothing to
it
do
does.
With that.
And listen, hear me out before you pass judgment.
Okay.
The lesson of Trump is that you don't apologize, you double down. And that's what of course he's wrong. Everybody in the world knows he's wrong. There's no doubt about it. You give it to a child.
That's a brilliant point. I completely agree with you. Thank you for equating that to the president. Actually, you're onto something there. But I think, you know what the trap of that is? That every time somebody of their own volition behaves badly, there's an impulse to blame it on Donald Trump.
I'm not blaming it on Donald Trump. I'm saying that it's indicative of a
Donald Trump did not influence this man's actions.
But it's
actions.
Indicative of a moment. And that maybe Trump is a symptom as well, in which the idea of admitting wrong is a sign of weakness.
You know where I think this does go? It's to the Naperville clerk at the gas station. I think that guy is empowered by an environment that it's okay to look at a minority and literally abuse them because their skin color is different.
I agree with that. And also, you mentioned this story earlier. We've said that he's been suspended by the gas station.
Yes.
Like, what?
We're waiting
they suspended
to
him? Like, what?
I think that's because it's hard to get somebody to work at Bucky's gas station in Naperville. That's why.
My analysis of Mai Tai Guy, first of all, those little kids were not going to get that ball. It was too far from them. You look at that video, it was like out there. He went out, he reached beyond them. They weren't going to get it. He got it. And so it's his ball by rights. I think he really blew it by not giving them the ball right at that moment. Because it would be a great feel-good story. Mai Tai Guy is now a villain to what happened.
Can't wear that jersey anymore.
Half the public.
Thank you, Eric Zorn. Thank you, Mark Baser. Thank you, Steve Bertrand. Zorn said their arms weren't long enough. They weren't going to get it anyway. By the way, Mai Tai Guy has half a dozen of those jerseys. And my understanding is he's still wearing them at Wrigley Field. He gets there often enough. You can hear the entire podcast. It was all like that, but we did get onto other topics. It's a pretty long one this week, too. and wherever you find your finer free podcasts, listen for The Mincing Rascals. It's 11:24. The question I asked you earlier was, give me your moon memory. Text your moon memory on this, the 50th anniversary. Read one, Griff.
Hey, John, my dad and little brother went to the Sox game, and I remember worrying and waiting for them to get home in time to see the first step on TV. They did.
Yeah.
But their baseball story was, so that day at the game, they were playing the Royals. The game was boring. They ended up throwing peanuts to the outfielder to eat, .. Lou Piniella.
It was a different time. You could toss peanuts to the players and not get tossed out of the game.
Another text said, I remember watching with my dad who cried.
Yeah.
He was a pilot, and I think he secretly wanted to be an astronaut.
How about that? 312-981-7200. Your moon memories, Earthlings. It's 11:28. Thank you for that news, Maple Walker. This is John Williams. And on Saturdays at this time, Griffin introduces us to a song or an artist maybe you didn't know. Boy, so far so good, Griff. That was awesome. Who and what was that?
That was Stereo Lab.
Liking that a lot.
They will be at Pitchfork tonight.
Ah, are they headlining? Are they one of the last acts?
One of the last acts. They're not quite headlining tonight, but yeah, I think they'll be right before the headlining acts. They formed in London in 1990. They were big through the 90s and then into the 2000s, and they kind of reunited sort of recently. And
Stereo Lab.
They're phenomenal.
Yeah, really. That was kind of like what they sound like. I'm going to listen
sort
to
of that. That's later period. In the 90s, they were more, I don't know, you wouldn't have the horns there as much, but they always had a very crisp, clean, interesting pop and sound. And you can hear that there are a couple of French members, too.
Well, for 1 to 100, and that's how we rate things on the Vibe score, 1 to 100, 100 is you like it, 1 is you don't, I'm giving that a 90. Joe Brand, go.
I'll give it an 85.
85? Maple, you want to play along? 1 to 100? Were you listening to Stereo Lab? And if so, 1 to 100, what do you give it?
Well, I was jamming and nodding, so I'm going to give it a 90.
Sometimes your body will tell you, right?
Yes,
if you're kind of leaning and bopping, you can't deny it.
Mm-hmm.
Joe can, but I thought it was just terrific. Griff, where are you on that one?
I love Stereo Lab. 95.
Wow, it really sounds like it. Try to hold your enthusiasm there, Griff.
It was just matter of fact. I don't
right.
I don't need to fake it. I just state the facts
here.
You
don't even need
95.
To advocate for it. It is what it is. It's a 95.
I won't be going to see it, though, because it's too hot.
Well, that's
I will not be seeing them perform tonight. No way.
That's what I want to put before the court of the Vibe score, and that is this weather. 1 to 100. Griffin, what do you give it? The weather this week was for you. 1 to 100.
20.
Joe Brand, go.
Yeah, I'm going to go lower. 15. It was hard to breathe yesterday outside.
Breathing is overrated. Maple, go.
95. I love it.
Maple and I. In fact, here's the way I do it.
What do you give it? What do you give it?
My Vibe score is always commensurate with the temperature. When it's 90, I'm a 90. If it's a 95, I like it 5 more. If it's 20, I like it 20.
Is that the only case in which you would give something 100? Because you famously, infamously, will not give out 100 to anything.
I don't believe in hundreds.
What if it was 100 degrees?
I would give it a 99.
That's stupid.
How do you feel about it? But and it's not just because we spent last October to this June lamenting the bad weather. So then it gets hot and everybody's in tears, right? I'm not doing that. I'm just saying I happen to like this kind of weather.
Right. No, you have to pick a side. You can't complain about both. Or you can, but that's annoying.
No, you can complain about both. You just have to move.
You can't
yeah.
be here.
You get 1 year of that and then you're out.
Well, but you know, as a person who lives in air conditioning, I don't know, 18 hours a day or whatever it is between my house and my workplace, right now I'm in a studio that is uncomfortably cool for me and I'm here all day every day. Same with my office. Elif, who I share an office with, she has a heater in there. Elif runs in the summer a space heater in our office. So that's just how cool it is where we work.
Can you vibe score that?
I actually understand that.
Well, I mean, in this building, I get it.
I think a lot of workplaces are like this. I don't understand it because I'm just always hot, but I understand that that is other people's experience.
I think there's two things happening there. It's a little bit of that, and then also, I'm sorry, I think it's a male-female thing. Ladies famously complain more about temperatures in office buildings than men. I don't know if that's biology
yes,
or what
do.
It is. Guys control the thermostats and women wear sweaters. That's the work world. It shouldn't be that way. It is that way. And you'll see ladies sometimes fruitlessly complaining about that. Guys don't. That's just the way it is. So I'm on, what is current temperature, Maple Walker? What are you showing at O'Hare right now?
I am showing 88.
I am an 88 for the weather right now. 88 is my vibe score.
What does it feel like, though?
Right, exactly. By the way, I don't know if Lou Manfredini did this, just as an aside, speaking of numbers, but if it's 720 this morning on 720 on the calendar here on 720 WGN, Lou at least noticed that happy coincidence. I hope he was able to mark it for us all. Happy 720 day. Let me just give you one other thing for you all to vibe on, and then maybe you've got something for us, Joe or Maple, but where are we on keeping the baseball from the little kids at Wrigley Field this week? Joe Brand, go.
I'm really against this. It's funny. Mark Carman had a whole segment on it on one of his shows recently after a White Sox post game. I don't get it. Maybe it's the fact that I'm around baseball all the time and the physical object of baseballs all the time. I just don't understand. I feel like the moment is so much cooler when you hand it to a young kid. It's cooler for you. It's cooler for that kid. And especially for a guy that collects these on a daily basis. Okay, it's a Kyle Schwarber walk-off home run, but come on, man. It's going to mean so much more for that child if you hand it to him.
And you just did that.
I did.
No, what did he just do?
He just caught a foul ball and gave it to a kid.
Oh, that's right. Joe did last week. We had the play-by-play.
He's not going to say it himself. He's a gentleman. I had to bring it up.
Well, here, I'll tell you this. Right, one of my first baseball memories, I was at a game at Wrigley with my dad, and you know how they throw away the home runs from the visiting team. The umpire goes, picks it up. He tosses it to me in the stands, and I'm like, oh, this is so cool. I can't believe this. This isn't the same ball. This is plastic. It's chewed up by a dog.
It was a phantom ball that
but
came back.
But honestly, I've never forgotten that story. I'll never forget the emotion I had when the umpire tossed me the baseball. I just think it means so much more for a child than a grown man.
Well, I don't have that connection that you do, Joe, but I'm with you. So on keeping the ball, I give it about a 12 if you're my tie guy. Joe, you're about in that neighborhood.
Yeah, I'll give it a 12, too, because that's how old you're acting when you do that.
Maple, you're throwing the ball. You keeping the ball or giving it to a kid?
Of course I'm giving it to a kid. -5.
Negative. Oh, wow. A -5 from Maple.
We haven't seen this since we did the vibe score on January 3rd.
It was -5. Griff, where are you on that one?
It's embarrassing for the guy. I mean, he's acting like a clown.
The biggest surprise to me was that the next day, having seen the video and that he was trending, that's where he had the real chance to, you know, unjerk himself, and which is an expression meaning you were a jerk, but you're not a jerk anymore.
Oh, okay.
That's what I meant by that. But, I mean, that's where he could have fixed it. He could have fixed it. He could have said, oh, my gosh, I'm this creature, and I
was in the heat of the moment.
Totally, he was. You watch the video, he's like, yeah. The next day, he could have, but he just doubled down.
But the heat of the moment lasted 36 hours, and I'm still acting like an idiot.
I'm still enjoying it, so I guess you are. Griff, you got anything else for us?
Well, we're talking about the space landing, the moon landing.
Yeah.
There was a bill that passed in the Senate yesterday about protecting lunar sites, specifically the footsteps of Neil Armstrong on the moon.
Right.
Should those be protected? Because we're on the eve of an era of more moon activity than we've had recently.
Yeah.
And people are worried that some of these historic, you know, sites will be, I don't know, ruined by the traffic.
Yeah.
And it's not just U.S. that has plans to go to the moon. There's a rover up there from China or whatever. Are you worried about the footsteps? Do you want them intact? Do you want the Neil Armstrong's first steps on the moon to be there forever?
And they are. They're in pristine condition.
Right.
They haven't changed a molecule from when he put them there 50
years
ago.
If I walked up to that and kind of kicked some dirt around and rolled over those footsteps, would it upset you?
Yes, it would. But
okay.
I mean, the Chinese are the ones that are going to do donuts on the thing. No American would do that. But it's like, this is... Okay, so if the question is... Should we protect it?
But why? Why do
I care?
Yeah, I kind of care too, but I don't know why.
That
bill passed unanimously, I think.
For the same reason I think we should preserve the Declaration of Independence in its original form.
Why should we do that?
So I am yes for it, but what a stupid thing for Congress to spend time on. Joe, go.
Yeah, save the footprints and do the mold where you can make a copy of it just in case they get
yes.
Somebody drops them on the way in back into the spaceship or something like that.
No! Maple, a thought on all of that?
Ditto. Yeah. I agree. Save the footprints. Come on.
It's some morbid part of me that is interested in the idea of them not being... just kicking some dirt. And just so that everyone would see that we were still there after the footprint was, and everything was going to be okay.
I just like how it's the current state of humanity. Like, oh, some teenager's walking down, texting on his phone, and walks over the footprints. Like, oh, what was that?
Oh, whatever. Whatever. You know, the flag fell down when they lifted off. We planted the flag, and then they lift off. But the dust cloud and from the going back up knocked the flag over. So the flag's on its side. That bothers me more than all of this. Joe, do you have one for us?
No, I did kind of want to get into the Hall of Fame things you were talking about a little bit earlier, because we're actually going to have a sit-down, a meet-and-greet with Harold Baines next week at an Xfinity store in Orland Park. He's going to be there. Be able to talk to some fans that want to come by, and it's just such a cool moment this weekend with the Hall of Fame induction. Like you mentioned, six guys getting in, and Mariano Rivera being the first unanimous selection. I know this is a very specific thing to get a vibe score on, but it just really bugs me that there hasn't been a unanimous selection before, because that's the whole gray area of the Hall of Fame is, you know, why are guys somewhat getting in? You should be a Hall of Famer or not. That should be it. It should be done and done. And it always bugs me that Greg Maddux was never the first unanimous selection into the Hall of Fame. When he was still playing, people were calling him the future Hall of Famer. I'm totally fine with Mariano Rivera getting the unanimous selection, but I don't know. I guess your vibe scores on unanimous selections for things.
Right. Well, I'll put it this way. So if 100... here's the deal. Maddux, 16 guys. I have it in front of me. 16 guys voted not to put Greg Maddux in the Hall of Fame. Why? Because that's just the way some baseball writers are, and it's about them. It's not about the athletes.
Are we sure that they were writers and not players that made those votes?
571 voters. Oh, that's right.
It's not just writers.
Yeah, that's right. So it could have been players who...
I think that writers are generally considered to be the more stodgy members
right.
of the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
So you can assume, but yeah.
And a couple of those writers became vocal about it, too, and why they didn't vote Greg Maddux. And it came down to, because I'll never vote for somebody in the steroid era. But that just proves to be wrong, because Mariano Rivera was pitching in the steroid era. So I don't get where their reasoning's coming from.
Well, and remember when Greg Maddux was dominating, he had those huge arms. It was obvious.
That was the thing I think that ticked some of them off, is like, wait, my kid looks better than him. He just struck me out.
One of my favorite write-ups about him was, this guy doesn't even look like the substitute gym teacher, and he's putting guys out left and right.
Cal Ripken Jr., who is the epitome of everything you want your baseball player to be, right? Eight guys voted not to put Cal Ripken Jr. into the Hall of Fame, first time they had a chance. And then the list goes on. I mentioned earlier, Hank Aaron, -9. Babe Ruth, -11. Willie Mays, -23. Ted Williams, 20 guys said, no, not Hall of Fame. And Stan the Man Musial, 23 people said, no, not for you. First time he had a chance, Joe DiMaggio, 12% of the votes were no. Joe DiMaggio, Mickey Mantle, -12%.
Well, we like to think that we live in the era of the hot take, that that's a new thing, but it's not. It's as old as time to zig when everyone else is zagging, right? And just get some perverse joy out of that.
Yeah,
that's these dummies.
Evidence there. We're out of time. Thank you, Maple. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Griff. We'll pause here. Amy Guth's getting ready to entertain and inform you. Coming up. Okay, that wraps it up. Thank you, Maple Walker, Joe Brand, Griffin Filipich, our producer, who will stick around with Amy Guth. Amy shared with me off the air, I asked her to share on the air her bright side from Friday.
It was really cute. I was walking down the sidewalk, and this man walked by a trash bin and tossed a crumpled napkin in there and missed, and it fell down onto the ground. And this little tiny girl, she looked like a cherub. She had all these like beautiful curls and was so cute. She was like, hey, don't litter, and in such a sweet little voice.
Hey, don't litter.
It was so cute. And such a, It was not the voice a kid would normally speak to an adult in. It was just the way an adult would speak to an adult. Hey, don't do that. And it was so cute, but her sweet little 4-year-old or so voice. And he kind of looked back with big eyes and turned and got it and put it back in the trash. He's like, I'm sorry. And nice. Everybody's standing there kind of chuckled because it was right by a bus stop. So it was really cute and sweet. So that was a nice little warm fuzzy there.
I'm guessing that too often that's plays out where the guy just keeps walking or ignores
it. Or shut up, kid, or something.
Yeah, or smacks her or whatever. And the parents are probably mortified that the kid's creating a scene.
Yeah, but yeah.
This played out the way Ron Howard will make the movie. I'm so glad.
That's really cute.
What are you doing on your show today?
Well, we are talking a little bit today about McDonald's rebrand. They have some new rules for the Golden Arches. About a year and a half ago or so, they realized, because they have so many franchises, they have a lot of different visual identities, and it was kind of a jumbled mess, so they kind of rebooted it and kind of liberated the Golden Arches a little bit, and so now they're free to be an icon-only sort of brand, like the Nike swoosh and things like that, where it doesn't have to say McDonald's on it. So we're going to talk to someone with a wonderful job title, the creativity editor at Ad Age, which is what a great job title. We're going to talk to her about that. And then we're going to talk about the Face app that a lot of people have been sharing the photos of themselves.
Have you done it?
I have not, because, you know, exactly what we're going to be talking about is kind of the implications of who owns your data, who owns access to your camera roll.
Which is another reason not to do it. I have a Face app. It's called My Face. And every day it shows me what I look like as I get older. No, Bertrand did it. Everybody's doing it. Yeah. I don't want to do it.
I can just look at my mom and grandma because I look just like them and know exactly what I'm going to look like. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, particularly because a lot of politicians have posted and celebrities. And so granting access to your entire camera roll could potentially be quite dangerous for a political campaign. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about employers' reactions to the changing marijuana laws. I know that's something you've talked about on your weekday show of just here we are in this moment where we're shifting about something that was once very taboo to even discuss and legalizing recreational marijuana after January 1st. So what does that mean in the workplace? I assume about the same as alcohol, you know, don't get drunk and come to work. Don't get high and come to work, but we shall see. We'll talk about that. And then we're going to talk about a J.D. Power study, and someone from J.D. Power is going to be joining us to talk about, apparently, cell service is improving. So for as much as we all kind of grouse about dropped calls and a lot of can you hear me nows, apparently it's improving. So we're going to talk about why that is.
Some good news for a change.
That's right.
Have a good show. I'll talk to you all on Monday at 1.